Drop the subject. That's right. It's time. I know you've been waiting. It's Allie and Dr. James Simmons, nurse practitioner. Boy, we have some exciting things coming up a little later in the show. But first, I already wanted to ask you, James, we were talking off the air about a bee situation. And rarely can I actually teach you anything in this world. You have taken all the school. You know all the things. And you started talking about, you know, before we went on, you were saying that there were some drowny bees in your pool, which is a first world problem to have. But let's get into it, because I actually have the answer
what?
To why bees do that. So tell me about what's going on.
I can't believe you have the answer.
And the reason I have the answer is very random, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, so this is a, yes, total first world privilegey, dumb problem to have. Not dumb, well, whatever. So I've never owned a pool before. We have a pool in the new house. We've been here a little over a year, and it's great, but owning a pool is kind of a lot of work. There's all this stuff you got to do. And one of the other things that you don't think about is that plants and animals and insects and whatever also like your large body of water, right? So like you're keeping the raccoons out of the pool. I think we talked about that story already. Well, the bees, there's already not enough of them, and they dive bomb into the pool. Generally not at you, but they will like dive into the water, and it's a saltwater pool. So my theory
is
that they can't get up out of the water because the salt is too heavy on their little wings. Mm-hmm. So half the time, if Chris and I are out there on like an evening having a little glass of wine and whatever, the bees will dive bomb into the pool. And then we spend half the time shushing the bees out of the water, like trying to get them out. And then I'm like, what is going on? And then they die. And then we've got dead bees all over the place. Like, I feel horrible.
Okay. Anytime we are at a pool, a public pool, our little, communal pool in our apartment complex, Katie is the one with a old letterhead or some kind of magazine or something, scooping her little heart out, trying to save every bee that has been in the water. And all these kids are trying to play and they don't care. And she's just so concerned about the bees. And the reason that she's concerned is because we bonded with a bee lady at a farmer's market one time. So we went to a farmer's market. This was last year or something. And we're, you know, buying the beef sticks and the whatever German sausage and goat cheese and all the crap. We have our little bins full of not overpriced, but good stuff. And we stop it. Every time we go to those things, Katie wants honey. And she is just a sucker, literally, for the honey. And so we stop by this booth, and this woman starts talking our ear off about how fascinating bees are, to the point where she convinced us to go visit her bee farm later that day.
What? And you did?
We did. And it was awesome. Nice. And she told us all about why she got into bees, because she got divorced and because she was terrified of bees and wanted to do something she was afraid of in her new life. And then she fell in love with bees.
Jump out of a plane. go in an Indy car. You know, rescue pit bulls. Like, don't
get road rash all over your left arm. All right.
Right. Live with road rash for your life. No, I'm kidding. All right. So she plays with bees because she got divorced.
She's like a beekeeper lady now. She works for this bee sanctuary. And so she tells us all about how feminist bees are, and how they pick their queen, and how if the men don't pull their weight, they literally rip their wings off and push them out of the nest. And how the only job of the men is to make more queen. I mean, she was telling us all about this stuff, and you could tell like there was some residual things going on with her ex-husband.
Just, you think? Just a little bit. Maybe more divorced people should become beekeepers.
She was a real advocate because her husband was an a-hole. Whatever. She talks about when our interactions with bees, and because Katie's actually afraid of bees even though she likes them. So the reason for, I'll give you first the reason that they come up to you, and then I'll give you the reason that they go into the water. So the reason that they come up to you is because they know that you exhale that CO2, and they need CO2 to kind of keep, get like a little rush of Red Bull to like keep flying to their next place.
So that is true. One of our friends actually said that to me.
Really?
Was like, oh, when bees come close to you, breathe out, like breathe on them. They need your CO2 as like you said, like a little nitro, like a little Red Bull.
And then they go, yes. So now when they come up to me, I just start going I just start breathing really, really hard, which is bad for COVID, but good for the bees.
But good for the bees. Do they fly away from you once you do that? Do they like?
Well, one of them didn't, and it landed on me and started crawling all over me. And I was like, okay, now I don't know. I've done the thing that the bee lady told me to do. But anyway, the reason why they go into the pool is because they need water. They need to drink water just like any other whatever mammal.
Really?
Thing. I guess they're not mammals, but they need water, but they need it in little teeny little bites, and they don't have any depth perception. So they think that a pool.
Don't they have like a billion eyes, though?
I don't think we got to the billion eyes part.
Like, how do you not have depth perception if you have a billion eyes? You should have all the depth perception.
So what they're used to doing is landing on little leaves that have like little sips like of water in them. Yes. So they think that your pool is a giant leaf. And then they go into it and they're like, no, wait, this isn't a leaf. What's going on? And then they're all drowny. But if you scoop, but the reason you should do the scoop is because their wings are wet and that's why they can't fly out of the pool. And that's why I bet it is harder in the saltwater pool. So if you take them out of the pool and you blow on them like you're supposed to blow on them when they come up to you, it will dry their wings off faster and they'll be able to fly away and go on with their merry little lives and pollinate and save the world, because they're all we've got at this point.
They are all we've got. Now, I do have to say that, you know, broadcasting from home, sometimes I'm doing this from a room where I can see the pool and I just see these bees like dive bombing. So if I ever just get up in the middle of us recording, by the way, and
jump
run
into the pool and block them.
Yes, it's because you told me to go save the bees.
Exactly.
From my pool.
We'll be right back. 2 minute break here on Drop the Subject.
Drop the Subject. The new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject with Allie and James. A guy who knows a lot about medical things and a girl who knows a thing or two about bees because she met a divorced lady once. And now we move on to another segment.
Makes total sense.
Ask the NP.
You know what happens when a nurse is late? People die.
Well then, let's get the party started.
Nursing.
This is a chance for you to get free medical advice, which is hard to come by these days. Anything you're afraid to ask your MD, you can ask Dr. James at Ask the NP. And today we discuss mask storage, because I fully admit on this radio station, a confession here on Drop the Subject, that I am not storing my mask properly. I've become one of the car people where they're just laying around in my car. They're laying around at the bottom of a backpack. They are then being dusted off. And thank God the one that I have is reversible, because otherwise I would have no idea which part I've worn close to my face and which part is exposed to the coronavirus filled world. So what the hell are you supposed to do? Tell us all of the things that we're doing wrong.
About the masks. Well, okay. So really you want to think about clean and dry is honestly like with these cloth masks, for instance, and in particular, clean and dry. More wet it is, the less it works. So you want to keep it dry and you want to keep it clean. So in your home, I recommend, you can even store it in your car. But here's the thing, Allie, just bring a couple little paper bags out to your car. Paper bags are like the new couture. So grab a little, like you used to do with the little old lunch bag, right? Like a little paper bag. Put a couple of those in your car and then you just shove the mask in there. And then you can keep the paper bags just scattered about your car. Also, a couple of extra paper bags are perfect for when you go to the restaurant or whatever, where you need to just like store your mask at the restaurant. You should never put it on the table, because it's actually less about like something from your mask getting onto someone else or your food or whatever. It's more about the Tabasco sauce from your eggs getting on your mask and then screwing up your mask from actually working. Does that make sense?
Yes. I am definitely one of the people putting, well, really my mask is a nice cushion for my phone on the restaurant table. So that's probably, you're saying I should not combine those things.
Yeah, probably not. The other thing is you should sort of assume, and this is a little bit of a stretch, I will say, but if we're being very safe, you should assume that you have coronavirus on the outside of your mask at all times. So the thing that sort of drives me crazy is people constantly touch the outside of their mask when they're moving it around. Stop touching the outside of your mask, because the other thing people are doing is touching the outside of their mask and then like rubbing their eyes.
Yeah. Yep. I'm guilty of that as well. Because the thing is, people who are insecure touch their faces a lot. And I'm one of those people. So I touch my face all the time. And then when COVID happened, I was like, wait, I'm not allowed to touch my face. And then it lets you realize how often you're touching your face. Then the mask thing happened. And I was like, okay, cool. Now I'm not touching my face. Now the mask I'm wearing so often that I'm now just touching my face through the mask. I'm rubbing my nose. I'm like going,
Yep.
I'm just doing all of the touching, but just with the mask on. So you're saying keep it in a dry place. And what is with the paper mask versus, can I do paper or a paper bag versus a plastic bag? Does it matter? Or are you saying paper for a certain reason?
Paper is just a little bit, it's actually more porous so that it gets a little bit of airflow so that it keeps the mask dry. Is really more important. And it's, listen, I don't want people to get like so like overwhelmingly obsessed with masks. The fact that you're wearing one and that you got a bunch in your car so that you can grab one at any time to go, I'm happy with that. Like, I'm not chastising anyone who has, I have different masks in my car. I just happen to keep mine in a paper bag because a lot of my masks I've worn in the hospital. So I like an N95, which sometimes is like gold, right? You like, you can only get so many N95. Yeah. So I put it in a paper bag. I have it, keep them in the back seat. But like, there's a couple of masks, like the mask I've used to work out and whatever. Sometimes it gets tossed on the seat next to me. Like, I'm with you. I admit that too. But it's more about people actually wearing masks, because these masks are turning out to be so important. And of course, they're so political. But Bob Redfield, the director of the CDC, is actually saying that he thinks masks, Allie, might be more important than the vaccine.
Actually, we have clear scientific evidence they work. And they are our best defense. I might even go so far as to say that this face mask is more guaranteed to protect me against COVID than when I take a COVID vaccine, because the immunogenicity may be 70%. And if I don't get an immune response, the vaccine's not going to protect me. This face mask will.
Wow.
What Bob's saying, immunogenicity. Basically what he's saying
is a lot of syllables. A
lot of stuff going on, right? Vaccine's going to work, but it might only work like the flu vaccine, for instance. Some flu seasons, we get it. And when we get it, the flu vaccine will protect you about 70% of the time. Sometimes we don't get it, and the flu vaccine will only protect you about 20% of the time. So what he's saying is that he's guessing this vaccine is only going to be 60 to 70% protective, whereas we know for a fact that if you wear a mask properly and someone else is wearing a mask, even if that other person has COVID, if you're both wearing masks and you are outside, it's 95 to 98% protective, which is more protective, obviously, than the vaccine. So there you go, Bob.
Wow. Well, thank you. This has been Ask the NP. I always learn a lot about what I'm supposed to be doing and not supposed to be doing. And if you have any other questions, direct them at Ask the NP. When we get back, it's Apple or Crapple. I'll explain later.
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
Drop the subject. New Channel Q. Allie and James. And we're online at DTS Show. We often have questions that we throw out to you on the social medias. And we appreciate it if you go there and you follow. We also got a podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, be sure to download, subscribe, rate us. 5 stars only, please. And, you know, my husband, Allie Johnson, is completely 100% obsessed with everything Apple. Everything. Mm-hmm. So
he is not alone.
He is not alone. He was a little bit sad that there were no in-person people at the Apple announcement earlier this week. But he was one of those people who, like, took a lunch from work to watch it.
To watch the announcements.
Like, stalking the $700 watch since then and, like, all of this stuff. And I'm like, why are you spending $700 on an Apple Watch when the one you just got 2 years ago is completely fine?
Yeah, well, you know, those are logical questions for logical people. And when you watch the Apple events, you are in a totally different frame of mind. My mom, she doesn't work there anymore, but she worked for Apple for about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And so she would go to all of the announcements.
Ooh.
And the woman that she worked for was one of the women that headed up the environmental part of Apple.
Oh, cool.
To make sure all this stuff was recyclable and eco-friendly and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be like, what's going on? And she's like, Bono's about to perform. I'm like, damn it, God.
Bono's about to perform.
I'm not working for a radio station. I get to meet Bono.
Right.
So we thought we would celebrate the Apple announcement from earlier this week with a game that I like to call Apple or Crapple. Is it something that was revealed at the Apple event earlier this week, or is it something I made up? It's Apple or Crapple. There are a lot of exciting things that they announced.
I feel like you should have to say that one in a different voice, Allie. You got, who's Minnesota? No. Australia.
Apple or Crapple.
Or Crapple. I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay. So there were a lot of announcements. I mean, all the pixels. It's the iPad Air has 3.5 million pixels, which just for reference, 20 years ago, there were, I think the first camera phone had 0.1 pixels. So we have come quite a long way since then. And they like to make their announcements with the liquid. They love to say retina display, liquid retina display, so many cores, all kinds of core processors, more films, more cameras, whatever. So I will read something that was or maybe wasn't announced at the Apple event earlier this week. And you guess Apple or Crapple. You ready to play?
Oh, I'm ready to play. Nope. Couldn't do it. All right. Yeah, I'm ready.
Here's your first one. The new Apple Watch Series 6 comes equipped with a built-in defibrillator. So if you go unconscious, the Apple Watch will shock you gently back to life. Siri will also say clear before each shock.
Can you
to ensure an unsuspecting person knows when you're where you're at in the process. Apple or Crapple?
You just go down and like a grocery store, and then randomly Siri, who's tapped in because of Big Brother through the satellites, a la the movie Eagle Eye, she just taps into the overhead grocery store thing and says, clear.
Clear. And then you can pick any accent, South African, whatever.
Okay, the other thing is I feel like sometimes the watch doesn't always pick up heart rates anyway. Like it's a little bit sensitive. So this has to be Crapple because every time the watch doesn't pick up your heart rate, it's shocking you. 220 volts. Like every time. And you're like, dude, I was just adjusting it.
In the middle of the grocery store.
Right. You're like, dude, hold on. I had an itch.
Going with Crapple. You are correct, sir. It is Crapple. But who knows, in a couple of years, maybe next year's Apple announcement will be different. Here's your next one. In an industry first, the Apple Watch has come with a slew of new bands that are eco-friendly, including a stretchable band design that comes in braided yarn. A precision braiding machine interweaves 16,000 polyester yarn filaments made of 100% recycled material.
I was going to say Crapple right up until the end there, where you're like 100% recycled material. And you just told us that your mom used to work for the environmental part of Apple.
Yeah, I gave that away.
Yeah, I'm going with Apple.
You're correct. It is Apple. Here's your next one. An all-new Apple Sheath protects the part of your iPhone charge cord that always seems to break off, exposing the wires. It is the Apple Sheath that will correct that little exposed wiring that always seems to break off when you plug your phone in.
But then, won't it just break where the sheath ends? Like, you just, like, move the problem down an inch.
Apple sheath, Apple or Crapple?
Crapple!
You're right.
I told you, I rule all games.
I do think they should make an Apple sheath.
They should.
Okay.
But they could. Moves the problem anyway.
All right. And then your next one is a digital car keys. Apple may or may not have announced a digital version of car keys that you can text to your friends and family. So you can actually text a friend or family member your car keys so that they can get your car from anywhere.
Okay, I'm going to say Apple.
This is for like smart cars and crap.
Yeah. Like I drive my car.
It's not for like
phone.
A Buick.
For the old Buick that's been in the family for 100 years. I'm going to say Apple.
You're correct. Yeah. I'll give you one more. I chew. The Apple Watch will monitor how much you're chewing and tell you when to stop eating, fatty.
I was going to say, is she also going to judge you for your stretch marks?
You know she will.
The COVID-15 you gained. I don't know. Maybe it will. I'm going to say Apple.
No, that's that crap.
Oh, damn it.
But who knows? One day, all these things. The Apple Watch will detect your blood oxygen levels, which was their new big announcement. But it's also waterproof and, I don't know, plane proof. And more drop the subject when we come back.
Detects gas on Venus.
Yes. It detected life on Venus. It was not NASA. It was Siri.
Yes.
More when we come back. It's 2 minute break. 2 minute promise. Coming back after this.
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
Welcome back to Drop the Subject, Allie and James. And so, kind of a lot going on in 2020. There is, you know, a global pandemic that we're all living through. Of course, at least 12 states in the United States, all predominantly in the West, are on fire right now and continue to be. I read something earlier, Allie and Jesse, not sure if you guys did, but y'all did. But there's smoke in Europe and there are smoke in Australia. So literally the smoke
from our fires
has gone like both directions over like a good like 2/3 of the globe. It's pretty unbelievable. And now on
so
top of
fun. Wow.
Yes, those fun. Yeah. On top of that, as a natural disaster and of course a global viral pandemic, it's hurricane season. And we are on our way to another record setting hurricane season. Maybe all of this has to do with climate change, depending on which cable news network you're watching. And now, unfortunately, you know, our friends and neighbors in Alabama, Florida, some parts of Mississippi as well are really suffering through Hurricane Sally, which hit yesterday as a Category 2, sustained winds of over 105 miles an hour. But as is the case with lots of hurricanes, as we've unfortunately come to learn in that part of the United States and really all over the world, the big issue with hurricanes is not necessarily the wind damage. That tends to come and go, but it's the floodwaters afterwards. And this one, Allie, is particularly insidious, is that it's only, at least was only moving when it hit land at about 3 mile an hour. So imagine a huge storm that's moving about as fast as someone walks, and all of the rain that gets poured down during that entire time. It's pretty unbelievable.
I see. Yes, I kept reading about how slow it was, and I was like, well, I don't understand, because I never grew up around hurricanes, so I don't really understand how they work or what makes them devastating versus not devastating. And but you explained that really well. It's because it's moving so slowly that it can actually do more damage in that time period rather than just kind of floating by, like just whizzing by.
Exactly. And that's actually a really common misnomer that happens, because people hear about these hurricanes and the sustained winds.
Yes, I just think of like,
yeah,
I think of the Wizard of Oz. Right.
Totally. And that's part of it. That's part of it. But that tends to like come and go, boom, pretty fast, few hours. And then kind of off it goes, especially when it hits landfall, they tend to slow down. The winds tend to slow down, all of that. But the slowing down process, particularly of these really warm water hurricanes like we get in the Gulf, they hit land and then they just like camp out. And then it's the sustained water that floods the infrastructure. So you have places like Mobile, yeah, Alabama, Pensacola, Florida, that have these, you know, hundreds of year old infrastructure, and it floods the sewers, it floods the streets. And so there are some streets in the last day or so that look like rivers. Like it looks like cars are floating down rivers, but those were actually parts of downtown of cities that were there on the coast.
And that's something that you can't prepare for.
Yeah,
I mean, you can and you can't, because the flooding, I mean, it's all dependent on how the city was already built hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess I don't know what kind of modifications you could really make to drain a street that's just going to be flooded regardless.
Well, and there's so much conversation about those things that happen with not only like, you know, we talk about like infrastructure, right? And every president and every, you know, congressional person and our representatives always talk about the infrastructure things that need to happen in the United States. And that's part of it. But then when you have places who like Pensacola, Florida, for instance, that's very touristy. If you make the recommendations that, let's say, the National Weather Service or the Civil Engineering Corps would say to make to protect a city and its residents from the flooding of a hurricane, what you end up having, big barriers, and you end up having not a very functional downtown, and you end up having these things that are bad for tourism. So it's this mix of like, do we make the city accessible and walkable and drivable and all of these things for what could, you know, hurricanes like this, where they're saying this flooding could be like once in 100 year type of flooding. So
and they said that it's not over anytime soon. They said it's going to be really slow coming out of this.
Yeah. I mean, basically imagine walking onto the shore in Pensacola, Florida, and then walking to Atlanta. Like however long that would take you to do, that's essentially how long this storm is moving. Now, it will sort of change into a tropical depression, a tropical storm sort of situation, and then it will pick up speed again on land. But these things are just devastating. And so for all of our listeners in that area and those who are there or have relationships there, or all of us just as Americans, like our, you know, whatever we can do to help in any sort of way and bring awareness to what's going on there. And our hearts and thoughts and prayers, of course, are with everyone going through this right now.
Absolutely. And our spirits will be lifted by Dr. Jen, who we're going to speak to next. So don't go anywhere. More Drop the Subject returns after this.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Welcome back to Drop the Subject on the new Channel Q. James Simmons, Allie Johnson, and like we do every week, it's Dr. Jen Mann. Hello, Dr. Jen.
Hello.
So good to have you on here. And you know, I have not seen you through the Zoom, and I'm not sure how long. We had those weeks where Allie and I were off and things were changing, and then Allie got to interview you. Now it's my turn.
And I sat in for you guys for a week, but I miss seeing your face. It's great to see you.
We got so much fantastic feedback from that week, by the way.
It was so much fun.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I know a lot of the listeners got a lot out of that. So thank you very much for that. And something that has really continued to happen pretty consistently, and this happened obviously pre-COVID, but COVID has really amped up this discrepancy in sex drives that can happen sometimes in couples. In particular, what's going on during COVID, what's going on in the racial social justice uprisings, what's going on. And we're now on 7 months, 8 months or whatever of being in lockdown. And I think the discrepancies in sexual libido and in sex drives with couples is really amplified right now. For folks out there who are in relationships, who are living together, and you have this discrepancy in sex drives, like I think the first thing that comes to mind is, oh my God, this is it. This is the end. Like we can't even have sex now with everything else going on. And so what are some things that couples should sort of like look for in that scenario?
Well, first of all, it's normal. So it's not the end of the relationship. Most couples, even pre-COVID, had discrepancies when it comes to usually one person wants it more than the other person. Typically, nobody tends to want everything at exactly the same moment in time. And we have stressors. Once you're in a long-term relationship, things change because, you know, all of a sudden you've got stressors, you've got kids, you've got work. But now with COVID, we have a lot of people who are really struggling with depression and anxiety, which impacts sex drive. We also have people who are out of work, which is devastating, who have financial concerns. All of these stressors, and also those that are actually employed, are doing oftentimes the work of two or three people because companies are trying to save money. So we're so much stress. Then also add in all of this racial injustice and add in all of these protests, an election, the fires. I mean, we are under so much stress right now, and that impacts our sex drive and that impacts our relationship and how we relate to our partner.
It impacts it so much. So I get to that specific moment, Dr. Jen, where your partner is trying to initiate intimacy. And you're thinking about your cousin who just got evacuated from a fire.
Yeah.
Or you're thinking about the racial social justice, you know, program that you're leading over Zoom at work in 3 hours.
Yeah.
What do you say in that specific moment, right? When you're completely distracted, but your partner's like, let's get it on.
Well, a few things. You know, first of all, I think it's important to let them know what's going on. That it's not that you don't find them attractive. It's not that you can't stand them. It's not that you're pissed off at them. It's not that you're rejecting them on a more profound level. Let them know, hey, honey, you are so sexy. You are the hottest partner I can possibly even imagine. But right now, I'm just not in a sexual place. I'm thinking about my cousin. I'm thinking about the buyers. I'm thinking about this meeting I have in 3 hours. Let them know what's really going on. That said, I also think that sometimes, and there's a caveat. The caveat is if you don't have a history of significant trauma, sexual trauma, sometimes you take one for the team. There are times where you say to your partner, in order to maintain the sexual connection in your relationship, hey, babe, I'm not in the mood, but convince me. Like, I'm open, and where you can let your partner kind of try to convince you, or maybe you do something that doesn't require a lot of excitement on your end, where you take good care of your partner and you've still created that connection. You have nurtured the relationship, you've nurtured them. And I think that it's really important that we not just, if we only have sex when we feel like having sex in a long-term relationship, we're not going to have a lot of sex. So it's important that sometimes we just say, yeah, you know, I'm not really feeling it, but hey, I'm just going to go for it anyway.
Now, what about those distractions? And I love this, by the way. I love that sometimes you got to take one for the team, meaning like you and your partner and take one for the team. And it makes sense. Again, for folks who have not experienced trauma in that arena. But okay, so you're all alone in the house and the kids are there, and meaning you're not alone. The kids are there, there's things going on, whatever. How do you sort of carve out space for that? So you've decided, all right, we need to, we've matched up this libido, but now we got to do this with the kids around.
Well, I think first of all, every couple, I said long before COVID, everybody needs to have a lock on their bedroom door. It's absolutely crucial. I have been stunned over the 3 decades I've been a therapist at how many couples do not have a lock on their bedroom door.
Really? Like,
I have heard way too many stories from children or even from adults who, as children, walk in on their parents having sex and are quite traumatized about it still to this day. Like, I also think you want to demonstrate to your children that you as parents take time for the relationship. Because even if you're not having sex, it is important to go into a room separate from your kids just to sit and talk and to connect and to cuddle and to spoon. I'm a big fan of the spoon. Especially COVID. Like, we need that kind of nurturing and security. So you don't want to be like, oh yeah, mom and dad went to their bedroom and locked the door. They must be having sex. Instead, it's like, oh yeah, every night at 8 o'clock, mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad go into the room. They have their grown-up time together where they get to connect, and we do our homework or we do our thing.
That is fantastic. And I love that it doesn't always have to be a sexual thing, right? The set the precedent that it's not always sexual. It's always, it's more about the connection between the adults and the household. So excellent, Dr. Jen. We have more with Dr. Jen Mann coming up after the break. We are going to talk about some very specific tips about refiring up that libido, finding it again if you need to in the middle of COVID and the world, well, literally being on fire. More Drop the Subject. We'll be right back.
Drop the Subject. The new Channel Q.
All right, we're back to Drop the Subject. Ali Johnson, James Simmons, and Dr. Jen Mann, who, of course, writes a weekly column every Wednesday in InStyle magazine for Hump Day. And we're talking about humping today. We're talking about when you don't really feel like humping, to be honest. And, Dr. Jen, in the previous break, we kind of talked about sort of what are those issues that happen when you're just not feeling the libido the same as your partner or whatever. Sometimes, though, I feel like that it takes work. Like, we're not all 20 anymore and it's just on all the time. And so what are some tips that we can start to do in the middle of the world literally being on fire, in the middle of racial social justice uprising, in the middle of not being able to leave our houses, to go find that libido, or if you've got a little bit of it there, to like turn it up?
Well, a few things. First of all, practicing good self-care, making sure that you are getting enough sleep, you're exercising, you're eating well, because if you're depleted, the last thing you're going to want to do is have sex with your partner. The second is nurture the connection. Like we were talking about before the break, taking that time on a day-to-day basis. I tell all the couples in my practice to do a minimum of 20 minutes. 30 is really my preference, of face-to-face time with your partner. No phones, no screens, no TVs, no nothing.
Wow.
This couples who actually do at least 20 minutes of that kind of time are less likely to have an affair. They are less likely to get divorced. So consider it to be kind of, it's like watering the plant of the relationship. It's giving it sunshine, bring it, because that's what you need as a foundation. Also, when you feel connected, your partner, the way they chew is less likely to annoy you, that they left their socks on the floor. And that connection is present and that bond is present. We're generally less annoyed with our partner, which annoyance and resentment tends to kill sex drive. The other thing is talk through stuff as it comes up. When you let anger fester, that is the quickest killer of libido. If you are a couple who has a therapist, utilize that therapist. Right now, every therapist I know is doing telemedicine appointments. So you can do it from your home. People are willing to oftentimes reduce their fee if money is an issue. And then also, you want to fan the flames of desire. We tend to stop doing the things that we did at the beginning of a relationship when we're further in. At the beginning of a relationship, we got dressed up, we put on cute underwear, we wear a bra, we wore a matching set, we weren't in our granny panties, in our sweatpants, like picking our nose in front of the TV. We took the time. So put yourself together. And it's not just for your partner. It's part of how you seduce yourself. You feel more sexual and more sexy when you've got it put together, when you've shaved your legs or shaved your face and like put yourself together. The other thing is, at the beginning of a relationship, we tend to think about the last time we had sex. We tend to think about the excitement. We tend to think about how good it felt, which gets us aroused, which makes us more ready for sex. So think about those things. Start thinking about sex, even if right now it's not in the forefront of your mind. Set an alarm on your phone. Take 5 minutes just to fantasize about a great sexual experience that you had with your partner or in your dream or in your history or whatever it is. Kind of get your juices flowing. Also, use erotica, use porn, use whatever it is that is auditory or visual or photos that gets you going, but don't take care of everything yourself. Bring it to the relationship. Get yourself heated up and then bring that energy to the relationship.
And I think sometimes that sort of feels like not cheating as an infidelity, but almost cheating as I think it took me a little while to sort of get over the fact that like, sometimes I got to do that. Sometimes I got to, and it's not that I don't find my partner attractive at all, because I think he is the hottest man on earth, but like, sometimes you just got to do the thing to get your brain going. And I was like, am I allowed to do this? Like, is this part of the playbook?
Some agreement in your relationship where your partner's not okay with that. It's actually a really important tool to kind of shift that kind of switch. Cause sometimes, especially right now under all of this stress, we're just not in such a sexual place and we have to get ourselves into a sexual place. We can't put it all on our partner.
Yeah. Now, last question before we get out of here, Dr. Jen, because there's never enough time with you, but how do you have that conversation when it's just not going to match? You and your partner's libido are just not going to match. And you're like, okay, I need to take care of this myself then, whether you're in the room or not, I need to take care of this. How do you navigate that conversation?
Well, I think that all couples need to have this conversation, ideally not when it's happening, because it can be a little more heated and not in the right when it's happening, but to say like, hey, you know, we're 10 years into this relationship. Sometimes you're in the mood, I'm not. You cool with me just kind of taking care of myself? Do you want me to save it for you for the next night? Like, I think that there is, well, we have the right to take care of ourselves anytime we want. We also are in a partnership and we have to be careful that we're not taking care of things so much ourselves, we've got nothing left for our partner. But I think that it's very fair to say like, hey, I'm not feeling it. You're feeling it. Like, you can go in the other room, or hey, can I watch you? Like, sometimes you're not in that same sexual place. Even if you're able to kind of participate and be in the room with your partner while they're taking care of themselves. Also, sometimes you're not in that place and your partner starts taking care of themselves and you're like, oh, suddenly I'm in that place. Like
this all of a sudden I'm there.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that. Well, Dr. Jen, like I said, there is never enough time with you. We appreciate you being on so much. Listen, all of the Drop the Subject listeners, you can find Dr. Jen online at Dr. Jen Mann, 2 N's on Jen, 2 N's on Mann. You can read her column every week in InStyle magazine on Wednesdays, as well as pick up, I believe, The Relationship Fix is your latest book, right? Is that the most recent?
Yep. It is. Yep. Yeah.
The Relationship Fix as well. You've seen Dr. Jen Mann on GMA, by the way, which is one of my favorites, of course, on multiple shows on VH1 and all over the place. And we are so lucky and fortunate to have you every week. Dr. Jen, until next week, take care.
Thank you.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Drop the Subject presents News It or Lose It.
Drop the Subject. Welcome back. It's Allie and James, and it's News It or Lose It time. This is the part of the show where you know what it is. We give you two headlines. Well, we give each other two headlines, rather, and we news one of them, the other we lose. It's News It or Lose It. I've got two headlines. Are you ready to hear them? Yeah. Here it is. If you didn't feel bad for the postal workers before, here's how colleges are mailing brains, hearts, and eyeballs to pre-med students.
I hate you, Allie Johnson.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, that's good that you're losing that, because you can lose the headline that Jim Carrey will be playing Joe Biden on SNL, which is great, but I think we have everything we need.
We have everything we need there. All right. Very good. all right. Here are your two headlines, Allie Johnson, for you to either news or to lose. Headline numero uno. Ellen just got even more bad news, and its name is The Drew Barrymore Show.
Oh, I saw that billboard, the Drew Barrymore show, and I was like, okay, why not?
Sure.
But I am going to lose it because I think she, as much as I love trashing Ellen, I think she needs a little break.
Because, and that's basically it. Like, everyone was just like, ooh, Ellen has competition now. And we're like, Ellen's always had competition. Like, whatever. As much as I also am in the, like, trash Ellen thing lately or whatever, I'm also like, let's just not make stuff up to make it up. So,
yeah, I mean, anyone can do, like, Soap Connect 4 with Ariana Grande. You know, doesn't, you know, that's always going to exist.
It's there, right. And there are other networks who also need daytime talkies. Whatever, I continue. Drew Barrymore, good luck. We will see. We'll figure out a way to trash you down the road, I'm sure. So fine. What you get is college professor politely tells Trump to STFU after he rudely interrupts her on live TV.
Oh, great. Well, let's go ahead and dig in. I'm excited.
Yeah. So basically, there was this disastrous town hall, ABC town hall earlier this week, right? For Donald Trump a couple nights ago, I think. And it was really bad. It was a complete and total debacle. He lied. I think the fact checker said he lied, like bold-faced lied at least 20 times.
Oh, is that high for him or is that average? I feel like that's average.
I feel like, yeah, even low to average maybe, but.
Poor fact checkers, man. They are really having a tough go of it.
Their fingers and brains hurt, I'm sure. They're like over it.
Just like as soon as it's open as his mouth, they're like, just start typing. Just go.
They're like, that's a lie. That's a lie. Well, during this town hall, which was supposedly for kind of undecided viewers and like the actual, like real Americans to get to ask our president questions live and in person. They did it all socially distant, blah, blah, blah. Well, there was a question from Dr. Alicia Black, who's an assistant professor of African diaspora literature at Kutztown University. She was asking him a question about pre-existing health conditions. And, well, let's listen to what happened.
Pre-existing conditions, which Obamacare brought to fruition, be removed.
No.
Please stop and let me finish my question, sir.
Oh, I love that she, Dr. Black, told POTUS, stop and let me finish my question. Do not interrupt me.
And I can just, I can't see his reaction, but I can see his reaction.
Uh-huh. There was a little, he surprisingly kept it together a little bit. Kind of, but...
But the thing is that he can't just get up and walk away anymore.
Right.
That was his go-to, is I'm done now. I'm going to turn around and I'm going to walk away. But when it came to his campaign, now that his campaign is involved and his re-election is involved, he actually has to face, like, getting up and walking away is not helping him. Uh-huh. So now he has to just sit there and take it. He does. Not doing him any favor.
No, it's not. And he did sort of do the, like, look away. Like, he kind of looked away, like, towards where his people were, like, oh, no, she did not just do that. But he also knew, to your point, he couldn't get up and walk away.
He can't do anything.
And he knew
it.
He couldn't say anything. He already was, like, halfway down an awful hole that he was probably not going to crawl back up out of. He's like, if I say one more thing, it's over. And just in general, like, don't interrupt people.
Yeah, that's true. We have to let each other finish, especially when they have questions that are embarrassing to the President of the United States.
Hello.
Let them finish. And now, on top of it all, colleges are starting to mail out brains, hearts, and eyeballs to pre-med students so that they can dissect things at home.
No. Because they got them on the dark web, Allie. I know where you're going with this. This is not funny.
No, I wasn't even going to say that.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Many students are learning from home right now, which means that they must dissect things from home. So colleges, there are some that are just opting not to do it, or they'll do like, oh, I'm the professor and I'll just dissect all these things in front of you over Zoom. But then other classes are saying, hey, why don't I just load up all these pig fetuses, put them in FedEx or whatever, maybe standard mail, and we'll send these animal parts to biology students and watch them dissect them over Zoom. Junior at the University of Arizona posted an unboxing video on TikTok of a sheep's brain.
Stop it.
And a fetal piglet.
You just want to torment me. This is exactly what you want to do. You're lying. You made this whole story up. The colleges are not doing this through the USPS. This is dark web, black market, elbow, toes stuff that you try to bring up all the time.
Drop the subject. The new Channel Q.
Just looking at our gay or cray cray story this week. Hi, it's Allie and James, and this is Drop the Subject. Happy to be here with you on this lovely Thursday. And every week on this day, we usually bring you a gay, gay, cray, cray story. Sometimes James will present one, sometimes I will. And this week, I am sharing with you, James, a story about a couple that has recently gone through some nuptials.
Aww.
Not Zoom nuptials or zuptials, as they call them. They didn't elope. It was a regular traditional wedding.
Oh.
And I will share as many details as I can without revealing the gender of the people involved. In this case, they're not people. There are eight legs in this story instead of four.
Eight, like eight legs each? Like there are spiders?
They're two octopi that were married under sea.
I didn't know we were, we're into gendering octopuses now?
Oh, yeah, no, we should not do that.
No, we are gendering spiders.
They have all kinds of, no, we shouldn't gender spiders. We shouldn't gender octopods, especially because they have beaks and they only live for a year. I learned that recently.
They have beaks? What?
Yeah, that's a whole thing. We can't get into it. Oh, let's talk about these dogs that got married.
Okay. Dogs.
They're both okay. So these are dogs, but I'm not going to tell you the gender, and you're going to guess if this is a gay couple or a cray cray couple, a hetero cray cray couple.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm even going to give you the names on this one.
Oh wow. Okay. I'm going to need it because I've never done four legs before or eight legs or whatever.
Felix and Machu Picchu are their names.
Okay.
They are
so not fair. Continue.
So it doesn't give you any kind of hints.
No help whatsoever.
But they have celebrated their loyal love with a photo shoot, a cake, and a wedding at a place called Happy Tales Rescue Retirement Home.
Aww.
It's a senior center for dogs.
What?
Yes. And they
I didn't know those existed. That's cool.
Yeah, they do hospice / old sanctuaries for pets, and this is one of those places. It's called Happy Tales of Mooresville, Pennsylvania. And the first line of this article reads, this is people.com, want to give them credit. They said the vows were in bow wows at a wedding ceremony at the Happy Tales Rescue Retirement Home.
I can't.
So these two senior chihuahuas, it was dog meets dog. It was love at first. So I don't know if
bark.
They can see. I don't know what their health conditions are, but I assume that they smelled each other's butts and enjoyed what they smelled and decided we need to be together in holy matrimony.
Aww.
So, and, you know, a lot of this is the people at the retirement, the people that are taking care of the dogs are like, they love each other. Let's make them get married.
Of course,
but still,
right.
I'm sure that they like each other enough. So,
and the dogs are just like, I'm 900 years old with arthritis. I can't move.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
This is why
you're going to put a pearl necklace and a tiara on me. So I guess I'm just going to roll with it.
Uh-huh.
So there are pictures of this photo shoot. There are pictures of the wedding. Here's some information about one. This is Felix. Felix arrived at Happy Tales because it was hit by a little vehicle. Aww. And it had, instead of being put down, they decided to save it and bring it to this little retirement community.
Uh-huh.
It was surrendered to the sanctuary by the owner who couldn't care for this dog anymore. So, now it is much happier and better off and getting married. But the question is, these newlyweds, are they guy girl? Are they guy guy? Are they lady lady? How many pearl necklaces and tiaras are involved in this canine matrimony ceremony? Gay gay or cray cray?
Normally I would just think that so that if people were like, we're gonna marry our dogs and whatever, that it would just sort of be like traditional hetero canine marriage, right? Like I would think that they would just be like, whatever, we have a girl dog and a boy dog, so they have to get married, right? But this is a place where they're into like pet hospice, and so at that point you're thinking in a little bit different of a mind space, right? You're sort of open to different things, probably with people and with pets. This one's really hard, and especially four legs, Allie, you're really throwing me, but I think I have to go. My gut is telling me just go straight up the middle, just be like normal, not normal, like what these like Happy Tail people would just be, and they want to marry a boy dog and a girl dog. So regular old cray cray Happy Tail dog people.
All right, you have gone hetero cray cray, and you are correct,
yeah!
James. The vows that were in Bow Wows were made by Felix and Machu Picchu. Felix is a lady dog, and Machu Picchu is in a very handsome tuxedo.
Aww.
I don't know if they got a pre-puptial agreement, but that remains to be seen. You're welcome.
This whole segment was all to set up that joke.
And now it's pause for concern here on Drop the Subject.
Stop it, Allie.
We'll be right back.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.
Time to close up shop. That's right. It's Drop the Subject with Allie and James. Of course, it's always such a blast hanging with you, and we love to hear from you as well. If you have any questions for our NP, our resident NP, he will answer any questions that you may have. COVID or no, he will, any kind of unexplained rash, anything really, he will talk to you about. Just go ahead and send him pictures, graphic ones, at Ask the NP.
I did get one recently. It had been a while. It had been a little while since I got a picture. I got a picture of, and this person lives in a different country, so I'm pretty sure they're not listening. I'm not saying names, obviously, but this person sent a picture of their uncircumcised and they were having a hard time with pulling the foreskin back because it was too tight.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad that you are there for that person.
Well, that was the most visceral.
I would just throw the phone out the window and run.
Guttural scream. I've heard you have. So if you had any question that Allie is really a lesbian, all I have to talk about is like pulling foreskin back. And she's like, that was great. That's going to be my new catchphrase. Jesse, can I say that on the radio?
I don't know if you can, actually. I think you can because you're talking about it scientifically.
Right, but I can't just like randomly be like, when you're annoying me, just be like, foreskin.
No, I think you can, actually.
Oh, I can. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, I think foreskin drops are what radio's built on.
Foreskin drops. We need to come up with a new game.
Foreskin drops.
What grosses Allie out more? X or foreskin.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm sure we can put... Jesse, go ahead and put that together for tomorrow.
Thanks.
Well, now we have something to look forward to, which is exciting. If you missed anything from today's show, James got a chance to chat with our favorite Dr. Jen. And we talked... we did Apple or Crapple, a new game.
Good game.
Based on the Apple announcement. Yeah, earlier this week. We talked about bees and why they dive bomb into James's pool. We talked about the hurricane in Alabama and Florida, and we did a gay gay cray cray that was senior pup related. So all kinds of fun stuff for you. And if you missed any of it, download that podcast, Drop the Subject, wherever you find your podcasts. We will see you tomorrow. James, you've been watching Lovecraft Country and you're enjoying it. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So
good recommendation.
Very good recommendation. Thank you very much. I'm going to steal it and then claim it as my own, since I am the king/queen of like really bad recommendations. So I'm giving this one to people on my recommendation. Not that you told me to watch it, just on my own.
All the people that you recommended Warrior Nuns to, just go ahead and recommend this to cancel it out.
It'll do more than cancel it out. This one's great. And what I was really upset about is the first review I read of this, someone was like, actually, this is a really interesting conversation. Maybe we'll have this with Dr. John next week. Someone was like, it was a white reviewer who was like, meh, doesn't really do it for me. And there are a lot of things about this show that has a lot of black like writers and people involved behind the scenes. And I was like, I wonder if this show is hitting for so many people and so many black people, because A, black people are starring in it, but also it's written from a black sensibility. It's being directed and cinematography and all that kind of stuff from a different eyes. And then this white reviewer who's used to reviewing things that white people make was like, meh. And I was like, I wonder if there's something there. Like not that race is always involved in everything, but I just thought it was really interesting. Either way, if you like great acting, fantastic writing, a little bit supernatural, a little bit like crazy, a little bit...
But also moments of gore and weird creep where you're just like it has cringeworthy horror vibes. It has amazing acting, like you said, great writing. It really does have everything. There's a love story, you know.
Abs.
It has abs, Jonathan both Major's female abs. And male, so they don't discriminate on the hot abs.
Journey Smollett and Jonathan Mayer, like, hello.
Yes, it is people that you really want to see naked.
Yeah, pretty much.
And just in really awesome 1950s-style clothing, too, if you like costumes. So it really has something for everybody. It's a fantastic show. Highly recommend Lovecraft Country. And recommend this show to your friends along with it. Why the hell not? Just throw it in. It's like a twofer. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Drop the Subject, the new Channel Q.